from Tukito LLC. It's Keto Woman Podcast with Daisy Brackenhall.
Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and I've always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. Keto has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again, without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Women Podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs to 20 grams or less per day, so things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds, and the incidental carbs you find in things like dairy. Moderate protein, scale to your lean body mass, and then fat to satiety. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you, make your own personalised keto. I'll be asking my guests each week what their keto looks like to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor and most of my guests won't be either, so we can't give you medical advice. It's always best to work with your own doctor because they know you and your medical history and so have access to the bigger picture. Thanks to my patrons for supporting me in this podcast by making a pledge at my Patreon page. Today I wanted to just give a shout out to those who pledge without reward. They don't get named publicly, but that doesn't stop me thanking you here at the top of the show, so thank you. Do you want to hear your name here? Are you enjoying this podcast and would like to help me make more episodes? Then head to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman or hit the support button on the Keto Woman Podcast website. It means a great deal to me to have your support. Thank you so much. This week's extraordinary woman is Barb Easter. At this point, I usually read out a third-person bio, but this week I'm using Barb's words. I'm Barb, a Canadian woman who is a bomb-ass wife and mother of two. I feed my people mostly keto on a hardcore budget. I get to chat with Daisy about doing budget keto in Canada, firmly parenting small people who only want candy and boogers as sources of nutrition, and how I found the best that Hawaii had to offer without ever visiting the islands. Daisy let me write this bio myself. That may give you some idea of what I had to deal with during this interview and why we had to cut the first 5 minutes because we were laughing so much. A bit of that still remains because, well, we had to start sometime. Welcome, Barb, to the Keto Women Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
I can see this is going to be a difficult show to keep a straight face because the listeners won't necessarily realize this, but I'm looking at Barb and she keeps making me laugh. So
you asked me to hold my breath and I did.
That is very true. I did. It's part of the practical thing we have to do at the beginning. But it sets up a total giggle fest.
It did.
So we are going to try and be grown-ups and give you a good show.
Okay.
So why don't you tell everyone a bit about yourself?
My name is Barb Easter. I live in Ontario, Canada. I've been keto since August 10th of 2016, after a vacation and my son's carby birthday party. I went, you know, I really don't feel well about myself. So I went looking for a solution to what I could do to feel better about me. I work in finance, but more in the communicative type role. And that's both a personal passion of mine and also my professional role. And one of the things that I'm really passionate about is budgeting. So I'm lucky that my big passion personally and my big passion professionally line up, and that's in a really good budget. Love budgets. Anyways, I've got a husband and two kids here in Canada. We're homeowners in the rural part of Ontario.
Tell me more about budgeting and finance and why it's a passion for you.
So like many people, I spent, I should have mentioned as well, I'm 38 and I'm really excited about being almost 40. Okay. Like to me, it's just it is just getting better and better. So, I started, like many people start in their personal and professional lives, not really understanding what the heck about how to manage cash. And it creates a huge number of problems, both in their relationships, okay, especially in a relationship with a partner, and in their business. So of all the things, and I'm a person who likes to try different philosophical ideas and models and try to like figure out what is life about? What is the purpose? How can we do it better? So without resorting to what I'm going to call life hacks, I do, not that there's anything wrong with them, I do like to just try to find the best way to optimize my life. Okay. Life is hard. I've got two small kids. I try to eat well on a very small budget, etc. So like, what are those things that help you become more you? So one of the things for me is budgeting. Okay. And I highly recommend it. So anybody says that they don't need a budget, I go, no, you totally need a budget. It'll work. I won't say miracles, but I'll say some really fantastic stuff in your life if you do it right. So there you go. That's why I love them.
I tend to agree. I've taken to doing spreadsheets and going forward however many months, as mm-hmm. many months as I can, with everything that I need to spend money on. Mm-hmm. And then I have two columns. I have the estimated cost column. So that will be things like the weekly food budget. Mm-hmm. And then there's the actual column. So there are things that I know that go every month, like, the phone bill or whatever. And I have, and that's usually about the same amount. So it's in the estimate column at a certain amount. And then it just gets moved over as soon as I know how it is. Some costs are fixed every
yes.
month. And then it's a case of really trying very hard to stick to the estimated cost. Like things like food bills are the things that I always go over
yes.
on. But that shows you what your actual amount of money you have
yes.
rather than just relying on what's in the bank on that particular day.
Yes.
I found, that can be so misleading because you think you've got more than you have because you haven't factored in those three bills that are going out
yes.
next week, when you're suddenly going to land up overdrawn if you haven't done your own bank account, as it were.
Agree.
At home.
Now, to you, I say, consider, I don't know how easy it is to set up an additional account, but we have to. So one of the number one places where people overspend, because it's both required spending and some parts are luxurious or optional, is in our food budget. So one of the things I strongly, strongly, strongly advocate for is to set up an account that's specifically for, in our account, we have food, gas or petrol, as you might know it, and coffee. So we move over a set amount of money for that every month at the start of the month. And when it's gone, I haven't had to resort to beans, which is what my mentor says. He's like, eat beans. I'm like, well, I don't eat beans. So there's often a day of bacon grease there at the end of the month if we run out. So to you, I say, if that's a point where you're struggling, try setting up a separate bank account and harnessing those, like putting a little corral around those funds. And that might be something that's useful to you.
That's a very good idea, actually. And a very good friend of mine is exactly how she used to operate when we were teenagers, actually. Really, really sensible. Was the money that she got every month as an allowance or whatever, she didn't have a bank account at that point to put it in, or didn't want to put it in, but she operated on cash when we were teenagers, but she carried that on to her working life when she did have a salary that went in every month, but she took out the cash that she had to spend every week on everything. Food, you know, going out, having fun, right. Bills, all the rest of it. So that she could literally see the cash and see this is how much I've got. And if I, you know, if I get to the end of the week and I've got a fiver left for the next 2 days, well, you know.
Bacon or beer. Got to make a
choice.
That's
my budget. Yeah. Exactly. So it's a very good idea, isn't it, to actually physically be able to see it, whether it's cash in front of you or whether it's in an account, to actually see how much money you've got. That's your allowance for that, and you're not allowed to go over it.
Yeah, it's putting it in a separate account. Of course, there's huge competition here in Canada that, you know, you get a free checking account, a free account, right? So it's not problematic, nor is it costly for me to have that grocery account where those funds go over to. Your mileage, of course, may vary, but that would be the single number one thing that I would recommend. The other thing would be find out. So if you have annual expenses, so most people don't know what it costs them truly to run their household over 12 months, right? So if I pick a month as sort of an arbitrary unit that's useful to reconcile and it's useful to divide your expenses into 12, then people don't seem to realize why they might be caught short on a given month when the car reg was due, right? So dividing that into 1/12 and making it a payable over the course of the year ensures that if you eat the elephant one bite at a time, by the end of 2 years, you will actually have had enough to pay the car reg, go into the hole, rebuild that for year two, and actually have the right amount of money so that you won't ever go into the hole with car reg again. Do you know what I mean? But it's never the first year. It's always from the anniversary date to whenever the reg is due again. So, yeah.
Yes, I can see that. And that's where it'd be very useful to have multiple accounts. Multiple accounts here in France.
Two.
Yes, I suppose I can see the advantage of having somewhere that you put money for those annual bills and somewhere that you put money for the weekly bills, like shopping. Because I know what I'm like, I'd probably dip into the annual stuff.
That's why you got to have a separate, that's why you got to have a separate one. Yeah. But all my other stuff, the mobile, the annual insurances, all that stuff just lives in another checking account. So I've got a checking for groceries, a checking for everything else that's bills and payables, where our paychecks go, and then finally a savings. And then I've got investments crap, but those are the three. I don't have a billion accounts. I just have two checkings and a savings.
Mm-hmm. Very good idea. Unfortunately, here in France, you have to pay for every single account.
I wondered that about France. I did.
Yeah. Yeah. Simply to have a bank account. And when you open a bank account, they straight away take 20 euros and lock it in another account because you have to pay 20 euros to close the account.
They're holding your account ransom.
Yeah. They have 20 euros sitting there ready for when you want to close the account, and then they'll take it. But I have to pay to have the account. I have to pay to be able to look at my account online. I have to pay to have a debit card. I have to pay to have an overdraft. I have to pay every time I use that overdraft. Oh, and I can't be overdrawn for more than 30 days at a time. It has to be cleared. So in my mind, well, that isn't really an overdraft. But yes, they're a nightmare, France, about charging you for everything. But in the UK, and I'm sure it's the same in America and Canada, Australia, it's free to have bank accounts.
I mean, free-ish. There's a few items that have fees associated with them.
Oh, of course, but not just having an account.
No. One can have an account. One could have 22 accounts as long as their, you know, security clearance is fine. You know what I mean? There's always that regulatory aspect in Canada. We get, who are you and why do you want another bank account?
Exactly. And they're quite tight on that in the UK now. So tell me about how this works in a practical sense with keto and budgeting and how you operate your food budget. And I know you have a time budget as well. To feed your family every week?
So we budget about, 125, 250, 375, about $600 Canadian a month for our food costs. So that's really low. Actually, food costs in Canada were projected to, and then studies showed that they went up by another $119 or something this year. So, and they're up at like $1,100 or something. But the problem with studies is that you never know, like, what do they call food costs? Okay, so if I were to add, like, well, we don't eat out very much, which is another thing for us. I have two small kids, and that they're wonderful people, but I cannot take my progeny to a restaurant and have them crawl under the table. I just, there's something in me that will not allow it. In fact, I can feel my spine stiffening as we speak, my face getting stern. Yeah. So we don't eat out a lot, but we do eat quite well, I would say. So between my husband and I, we tend to fast intermittently when it suits us, or for a couple days when it suits us. So we're down to often one meal, maybe two. Don't usually have breakfast unless it's the weekend. We have a fry up kind of thing. What is that fry up? That's like not potatoes, is it? Because there's not potatoes in my fry up.
Fry up? No, in my mind, it's a full English breakfast. A fry up. It's whatever
bacon and
you
want
to put in, but bacon and eggs is your All typical right. baseline. Okay. Yeah.
As I used the word fry up because I thought you would identify with it. I thought, oh, I should maybe check. Because it doesn't include potatoes.
Absolutely.
Here.
I identify with that 100% daily.
Yeah. And the kids eat sometimes a keto breakfast. Sometimes they have cereal. They, you know, it's a balance because they need to self-serve, right? So they have cereal, they have keto lunch, and then they have a keto dinner with us. So we get her done. So I do try, like I make all the lunches at the start of the week. If there's a big piece of meat, which is often quite economical, then I cook it and I cook it very plain, honestly, because then over the next 3 days, like one day it's Asian, one day it's Mexican, and then the third day it's just mash, right? So that helps us. There's been entire weeks that we eat a pork roast and the kids go, oh, they don't even recognize that it's the same thing. So
that's the beauty of herbs and seasonings and things, isn't it? You can switch it up.
Absolutely. So that's basically how I get around being on a very tight budget and also starved for time. Like it's good home economics. And I think as much as I like foodie culture, I think foodie culture sits at odds with home economics in a lot of senses, especially here in North America.
Why is that from a budgeting point of view?
From a budgeting point of view, mostly. I think we are encouraged, and also from a time point of view, we're encouraged to make a new meal every single night. Well, at some point you just have to give yourself a break and say, hey, it's leftovers. And then the leftover of leftovers, right? And that really buys me a lot of time in my life because I probably cook once every, on average. I make a salad every day, but once every couple days. I cannot cook every day. I can't do it. I just can't.
No, I'm exactly the same. I cook every day in the fact that I usually do have a fry up for breakfast. Mm-hmm. So I cook that every day. But even that I save time with. I usually, bake a tray of bacon and the two sausage patties that I have for the 2 days. And that lasts for 2 days, the packs of bacon that I have. So it's less cooking on the second day than it is on the first. But that's the meal that I sort of cook every day. But yes, my evening meal, I'm exactly like you. Mm-hmm. Like I cooked up some beef short ribs with this wonderful barbecue mm-hmm. sauce, and that's made the size that I made. I put some of them in the freezer because it's made about 8 meals.
Yeah, that's what I'm
talking
about.
That's great because I spent a bit of time cooking it and, you know, spent a bit of time and love and effort mm-hmm. into it. So it's really delicious, but then huge amount of time mm-hmm. saved mm-hmm. with all those other meals. Great. I'm down with that. I can also eat the same thing for days on end
me too.
Without getting sick of it. So,
me too. Yeah. And you know what? I never really made that an issue with my kids. So they're fine eating the same thing. They don't really notice. Their things are, so for instance, their pain point is, for instance, they like to pick things out of the fridge and put them in their lunch bags for lunch. So it's something completely different than my pain point would be under those circumstances. So they're easy to accommodate without me having to lay out any extra work, we'll say, in parenting. So I don't know. I feel actually throughout this conversation, I'm like, you know, that's economy too. So being uneconomical would be to provide them with something that they don't particularly need or want. To be economical is to provide, we'll say, what is adequate in the various spheres that adequacy is required, right? So being economical, I think, gives you choices, both in your time, in your spending habits, in your food choices. And I see keto as kind of an economy as well.
It is, isn't it? It's definitely a paring down.
I think it is.
And it does make life easier in a lot of ways, giving yourself fewer choices.
And better.
Yeah, of course.
When was the last time you had like an actual slice of bread? Can I ask?
Yeah, a long time ago.
I'm making a face at her right now. That's like a very, you know, the face you make when you put something in your mouth and it's like mealy and kind of gummy. So, yeah.
Yeah, that sort of tasting it and trying to sort of uh-huh. spit it out at the same time.
It doesn't chew properly was the response from one of them. So they're 8 and 5. They're wonderful people. Anyways,
you prepare all the different things and then yep. they sort of select from that selection yep. what they want each day.
Yep.
Great. So everyone wins.
I'm not creative. They get cheese and deli meat. Deli meat's a fight that I'll fight a different year. So they get cheese and deli meat for an entree. They get a low-carb veggie. They get an other, which often for them is dairy. So they either have Fogurt or they have a piece of cheese. We're nut-free throughout Canada for the reasons that some people here are anaphylactic and have very life-threatening allergies to nuts.
Oh, I see. In schools, yes. They're not allowed to take. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see why. Yeah.
We're actually fine with that. I've heard both sides of that commentary and people are like, wow, you know, I eat keto. I need to send my kid with nuts. And I'm like, probably not at the expense of somebody else's a medical emergency. So I try to teach my kids like what inclusion means. They can come home and have nuts. So they do. What else? They take water to drink. That's about it. I mean, it's nothing very... Oh, and a piece of fruit. So if they want fruit, sometimes it's... Right now, it's a lot of apples because we're going through all the winter apples here in Canada. But that's...
So they sound like they're pretty on board with the keto lifestyle.
I'm all about not giving people choices if I don't want to give them choices. Do you know what I mean? Like, why would you ask somebody if they were okay with it if really in your own mind... You're not okay with giving them that choice. And then, you know what? We had crackers in the cupboard and they nommed those up when we started. And then there weren't any crackers. And they're like, there's no more crackers. And I said, I know, I'm not buying any more crackers. And they were like, okay. And then they went and they were like, oh, there's no more cheese strings. I'm like, oh, totally. Let's go get more cheese strings. Okay. And so they didn't feel deprived and they didn't feel disciplined. But at the same time, I'm clear on my boundaries where my choices lie. I'm that kind of a person, right? I'm like, I'm the mummy. I'm okay. Like, this shit just keeps rolling downhill till it hits me.
That really ties in what we were talking about before we started the show about not overthinking things. And that would be a case in point, wouldn't it? That you'd be overthinking it by trying to think from your child's perspective. Are they going to be okay with it? Are they not going to be okay with it? You as the parent think, well, these are the healthy choices to give them. These are the choices I'm going to give them. And I'm pretty sure they're going to be good with it. So let's just do it and see what happens. Why overthink it?
The really nice thing about that is that it also saves you from judging other people's choices. Because you say, just as I am making the best choices for my family, so too you are following a similar life path with your kids. And while it might not be what I would choose, I've fully had my choice in my life. I'm not looking to choose for other people. So it actually does do a lot to minimize some of that, the quote unquote mommy drama that you hear about from time to time on Huffington Post and other such places.
Now, I know that community and friendliness are really important to you. It's something that's always been very clear interacting with you on the KKB Facebook page, that you're always friendly. You know, you always give to the community.
A couple things. So I think it starts with knowing your own boundaries. So I think in a lot of ways, we're distracted as a culture. Okay. Like, I think it's a good thing to actually sit down and think about what are my actual boundaries here? Like, what are they? Okay. And then you have to, so I'm a person that needs to rehearse these things. Okay. So like I used to get very, very, very anxious. In fact, I had, after my first child, I had postpartum anxiety. So if that's anybody listening to this podcast and you think that might be you, or you think it might be a friend of yours, please reach out to me. This is the thing that I say to literally everybody that I meet on the planet these days, because it looks different than postpartum depression. So anyways, so back to me being anxious and how I really refocused my life to combat that. So you have to figure out, what are your boundaries? So we have to sit with that uncomfortable question inside of ourselves for a little while and really engage in a little bit of dialogue with yourself when a situation comes up. And then, if you're me, you have to have that line at the ready. Okay, what are you going to say when somebody pushes your boundaries? So I have two things that I say regularly. One of them is, sorry, that doesn't work for me. And then when people say, oh, really? Why? I say, you know what? It really just doesn't. And then if they continue to push, which is okay, all right, interaction is not bad. It is often frightening, but it's not bad. Then the next thing I say is, you know how, so I'm making a puzzled face right now, okay? You know how you just have a picture sometimes of how it should be in your mind? And then I just kind of let the conversation trail off. I like become boring.
So there's an element of distraction there.
A little bit.
So you switch their brain onto something else. And then we just, you know.
My boundary is that I don't have to provide entertainment or amusement for anybody that I don't want to. And I don't have to justify my decisions. What was very helpful for me is knowing that, what do I say? Okay. So, and I think that's an important strategy as we try to figure out what community is. We know that community is vital. We know that we have to talk with people and interact with people. How do we do that? Because so often it's uncomfortable. And there you go. My number one strategy is how to tell people no without having them get pissed all the time.
Well, in a lot of ways, that's easier to do with people who aren't close to you. What happens when communication problems or issues that you have with your friends or immediate family come up? So you're locked into it in your home. Now, I know you have a really good strategy with how to deal with this.
I'm going to lay it out for you. Okay. So a couple things. So the really great thing about family and friends is that the statement of, you know, that really just doesn't work for me is often all that they're expecting to hear. Either something does work for you and it's a go, or it doesn't work for you and it's not a go. So you have to understand that you're loved. So if you're not loved, you haven't found your people, and that's a separate problem. If you are loved, that's basically enough. So as we were chatting before, I'm the adult child of an alcoholic. Okay. And so I have huge aggressive boundaries. Okay. And I used to feel like people were challenging them all the time. So some of the things that I've spoken about are things that I've had to learn about. So what happens when we'll say between my husband and I, we've had a fight, we'll say. Okay. And, when we both use our adult words and we say, oh, that's not working for me. And somebody says something else and it escalates as fights are wont to do. How do you bring yourself back into a state of repair, community-mindedness, love, sex, all that stuff? How do you get back? Okay. So this is, again, like all these models that I source out and I try to see if they work or not.
And not holding a grudge, I think, is important, isn't it? It's to resolve it, but to put
an end to it.
To resolve it and work through it and put an end to it, yeah. So that you're not carrying it forward. It's not something that's going to come up in an argument 2 months down the line.
Grudges are so heavy. I can't be heavy anymore. Okay. So a lot of this, in a lot of ways, actually, but a lot of this transpired, of course, because when you eat keto food, you can no longer eat your feelings, right? So when you're sad because your dad was an alcoholic, or you're sad because your kid's sick, or you're sad because you don't have any friends, or you're sad because you don't like your house, or you're sad because it's winter in Canada, or you're sad because, like, whatever, you hate your job, you hate your spouse, whatever. A lot of this came to a head with me because I could no longer stuff it down with carbs, right? So I had to figure out what else to do. So I started testing all these different things, like what works, what do counselors say and therapists say. And the thing that has worked the best for us is called, it's a Hawaiian practice called Ho'oponopono. Okay. It's got an apostrophe and a couple extra O's in there. So if you go to Google it, you got to be sort of, you got to cast the net wide for your spelling. Okay. And actually you're going to put it in the show notes.
I am. It's going to be in the show notes. Yeah.
So I made a really basic agreement with my husband that we would practice Ho'oponopono. The first person who came to their senses after a raging red argument, okay, would start the process. And the process is so simple. I'm just looking for my page, because I still have to look at my page, because often I'm still very angry when we get down to that point. So one second here.
That's a good point, actually. So you have a physical checklist that you can work through.
Yeah. The page that I gave you, it's the one that I actually use as a checklist. Let me give you a lowdown on how Ho'oponopono works. Okay. So when I've been in a red rage and whichever one of us comes to our senses first decides that it's time to do some repair, then I actually have a checklist that I follow, and that is basically you are prepared for, like, the core process is a 4-step process. Okay, there's a little ahead of that and at the end of that, but the core process is 4 steps. Okay, so I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you. Okay, and then the other person gets a turn to say the same things. So it just seems to trigger that switch in the Easters that allows us to turn to a more constructive frame of mind to deal with what the actual problem was. So ideally, you would stand with the person, okay, that you were angry with. I have used it effectively through email, through text. Like, it's a process that works, right? There just seems to be something about those phrases that helps you come back into yourself, right? So yeah, I'm sure you're gonna put that in the show notes. So
mm-hmm. So you say these words, mm-hmm. but where do you get the opportunity, or do you get the opportunity to say the things you need to say? Perhaps you need to say, you know, why you were feeling hurt because of the things that your partner said to you, or, you know, do you get the chance to get those niggling things out that you potentially would hold a grudge over if you're not able to voice them and exercise them? So which part of the process, you know, where does that happen? Or is it something that happens after you said the words?
So often it's all I can do to vomit these 4 phrases out the first time. Okay. Like, I feel sometimes like comic book style, my husband and I drag each other or drag toward one another, clawing on the carpet. We fall down side by side and we're just still like, if I had enough energy, I would just continue to beat on him. Okay. And I'm like, I love you. I'm sorry. Thank you. Please forgive me. Okay. So it's often not it's very messy at first. And then everybody just sort of leans back for a little bit and we think. And then, because you've opened the door, then you're able to go back through and say it again. There's nothing, here's the thing. Those words are not, we talked before about economy, a little bit in terms of home economy, but you can spend out on those phrases. If you need to say them again and again, you can. There's nothing wrong with that. So then we go back through a little bit of a longer process. So what was the problem? Let's think about that. Let's talk about what actually might be aside from the problem. What was the transgression? Sometimes there's lots. Okay. Sometimes I can't get out of my own way. The other really great thing about presenting this sheet of Ho'oponopono to your partner is that you're basically under an agreement to try to work through the problems and cooperate. You're committing to not holding a grudge. You're expected to get in, deal with it, and then let it go. So the whole process is designed to just to deal with the problem and then call an end to the strife and move on. Okay? Without giving people the license to continually abuse or take advantage of you, it's designed to put an end to it. So in a normal problem, you're not going to have a grudge. Right? You'll get to speak your piece. Other people are expected to help you problem solve. Everybody's feelings are acknowledged. Okay? And then again, then usually the second or third time, I'm able to say my four phrases with some legitimate feeling, like some legitimate goodwill.
It seems to me like one of the key things is doing is just inserting a pause, inserting some moments to just cool down and reflect a bit. So you like you were saying, you vomit those words out to start with, but that just gives everyone, when you've both said it, just gives you the freedom to just pause for a minute, reflect a bit, maybe think a bit more about the other person, and then you just keep going through it, presumably, until you're both good with it.
till you mean it again. The nice thing about this kind of a pause is that If we think about a pause, it can be a very neutral thing. It could be a negative thing. Often for me, it's a negative thing. I go into an anxious overthinking or just a red rage, just like, okay. And I talk myself right into the nice thing about this kind of a pause is I think it's very positive. You've basically gamed your argument. Okay. You've acknowledged that it needs to be over and resolved, right? But using the four phrases that lie at the core of Ho'oponopono help you get into a positive mindset, which is actually the point. The point isn't you marry your spouse or you shack up with your partner or you're committed to your partner and you're going to declare war on them. The point is when a skirmish happens is to get through it and over it without standing amidst a field of rubble and dead bodies, right? So the nice thing is it's a positive pause. So it kind of vaults you over some of that. You know, it's almost sometimes it fast forwards you to a more positive point. So yeah, I endorse it.
Mm-hmm. I can really see the benefits, and I can see just the very fact of launching into those phrases says, I want to put this right. I realize that we've got into an argument. It's got out of control. I don't know exactly how it's going to get put right quite yet, but this is me launching into the start of that process.
Agree. So I think probably there's going to be a couple points. So one, if there's continual abuse or continual victimization, not appropriate. Okay. But you know what? It's never not appropriate to stand in front of a mirror and have Ho'oponopono with yourself. Right?
Good point. Yeah.
I freestyle this shit. Life is too short. I've got to like get it out there, right? The other thing too is I hear people that say things like, well, I'm not sorry. You could probably put down your ego and find something in that situation that you weren't proud of. Okay? The point is the words need to be spoken by both parties. Okay? And the other point of Ho'oponopono is that you got to give it a good, honest effort here, right? Like, I'm almost, like I said, I'm almost 40. Like, I'm not screwing around anymore. I'm not lying, to myself, not lying to others. Get in there, get her done, right? And get back to the business of living as soon as possible. Living peacefully, mostly.
It's a great practice. But talking about things that you do concisely and you like to hone things down and get rid of the junk, one of the little things that big little things that you do that you told me about is you only wear 5 colors, and that has completely changed your life.
Okay. The capsule wardrobe. Okay. So there is, I stumbled a couple years ago, again, with all these things that I'm like, how do you live your best life? Okay. And if you knew me personally, it doesn't have to be, it's not a glamorous life. It's not a life with like mad money or, you know, exciting times and fast cars. But still, that doesn't mean that it can't be the best life. It's a very ordinary life, but I'm trying to live it the best that I can. And one of the things that I stumbled across was the idea, the workable idea. Okay, not just the idea, but the workable idea of the capsule wardrobe. So there is a website, I think, that will appear in the show notes called the Vivian Files. Okay. And she advocates for finding, and she's like a really foundational series of articles about finding those two colors and three neutrals that are already probably in your wardrobe, getting rid of all the other stuff, and basically optimizing your wardrobe so that you look the best in the colors that you like the most. So, and you haven't asked me, but I will disclose that I've got, okay, so I'm a, if you're familiar with like the palette idea, like the seasons, color seasons, I'm a winter. So I've got really fair skin, really dark hair, some gray that's going to be like a, I think probably a whitish gray, and hazel colored eyes. Okay. I'm that person that I get rosy cheeks all the time. So my colors are crimson red, royal blue, and then my neutrals are black, gray, and white. Okay? So you're thinking that that's not a lot of variety. That is a huge amount of variety. And now when I pick a top and a bottom, okay, 95% of the time they go together and they look good together and I can carry on with my day. So I used to have like orange shirts and olive green shirts and brown pants, and now I don't have any of that. It was just so liberating to clean all that stuff out of my closet. Also, it didn't fit me all that well. Okay. And just know, so as I lose weight, to know that I don't need another black sweater. I certainly don't need an olive green sweater. What I do need is, we'll say I'm looking for, a new pair of jeans, but I want them to be gray black. Okay? Because that kind of goes along with the thing that I've got, right? So there you go. All my socks are black. Throughout all the other colors of socks. It's a beautiful thing. So now I'm working on outerwear and pajamas. Okay?
I love how your love of budgeting has just influenced every part of your life, because that's what it is. That's what you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah,
really. And when we were having this long conversation before we started the show about clearing out all the clutter,
yeah.
And I am the world's worst hoarder. And as you're speaking about the joy of having this concise capsule wardrobe and how much time it frees up and how much anxiety it gets rid of, I'm a nightmare. I've got so many colors, so many styles, so much stuff that I've accumulated that I can't ever throw away, because I might one day, 2 years down the line, want to wear that thing that I've thrown away, because it's happened to me before. I thought, oh yeah, I really wish I still had that thing that I threw away, so now I never want to throw anything away. But it is stressful. And budgeting in every area of your life, I can just see how liberating it is.
Oh yeah, like totally did so much for me. Here's my thing. Okay, so there was things that I did not throw out. Okay, but a capsule, like a color capsule wardrobe, can look any way you want it to. Like, I don't know, like, yeah, France is a similar climate to Canada, so I've got to have winter and summer stuff. Some people, that's not the case, right? Some things I held on to initially until I made a second pass, and it gave me a lens through which to evaluate whether they were actually, so why did I like it? So I'll give you an example. I used to have an off-white cable knit sweater, like a chunky, heavy sweater that looks good oversized as I've lost some weight. So I kept it, even though technically it was like an off-white rather than a white. Okay. And then when I made my second pass, because I was like, oh, I need to hang on to you, I was able to actually, for the first time in my life, evaluate what I liked about it. I liked the chunk. I liked the cable knit. I liked the fact that it was fake wool. It was an acrylic product.
Soft instead of itchy like wool is. Yeah, yeah.
Right. I did not like the fact that it was off-white. So, having been finally able to evaluate this piece of my wardrobe, right? Now, when I go out shopping for something, then I know what it is that I want that would actually be the best for me. Right? So this is all
yes,
new
exactly.
to me.
Yes, exactly. So you go with quite a specific list. Mm-hmm.
I should forward you my
of
list.
Things, of something that you actually want. Like you said, you want a pair of grey back jeans. Mm-hmm. But you might go on a bit of a browse shop, but you have this list of, yeah, I'm going to go and browse and I'm going to go and have a look around, but I'm only going to get it if it ticks all these different boxes.
Right. And I never had that framework to apply to that before. So people used to say things. So my older friends would say things like, you know, don't accept anything that's not good enough for you. Well, that's all well and good until you don't actually know what's good enough for you, because you haven't sat down and thought about these fundamental aspects of your life. What is good enough for me to spend my money on? How do I decide that? What's good enough for me to buy to clothe myself in? And of course, with being overweight, there's a whole ball of wax to unpick around that in terms of self-image. So, how do you decide these things? This is my thing. Like, I wouldn't have a problem deciding it if I knew how to decide them. So for me, the concepts of budgeting and the larger concept of economy are a lens through which I can get rid of the chaff and focus in on what I really want. Like, if you ask people what they really want, they don't really know. Right? Oh, here's my thing I carry around on my phone that tells me all the different pieces.
That's very good. Yes. So I'm looking here, yes, at a picture of all the different things that you're looking for, that you might want to buy, yeah, that they're in the colors that you mentioned, different kind of styles. Yeah. And yeah, so that's your sort of potential shopping list when you go out.
Yep.
Yeah. So if you spot something that fits one of those, I'm going to try that on.
Yep. And then if I don't, it at least avoids me coming home with another black sweater, olive sweater. I mean, you look great in olive. She's wearing olive right now. It's not my thing, but I had them because I didn't really have a firm framework of what I should be wearing. Anyways, so we've wandered so far from the topic at hand, I think, but...
Well, we have and we haven't, because the whole show really has been about budget and economizing and just making sure you get rid of things out of your life that don't need to be there and that don't make you happy.
And then you have room for more stuff that does make you happy, right? You have more time.
Exactly, which is the important stuff.
Mm-hmm. More time, more energy, and more money for the things that do make you happy. I mean, we can afford everything, or anything, I should say, anything. We can afford anything time-wise, resource-wise, lifespan-wise, and money-wise, but we just can't afford everything, which we're sold this sort of consumerist mentality that really doesn't suit us. But unless you stop and have a good think about it, you don't really know what's wrong, right? So it really provided a good framework over the past, we'll say, 4 or 5 years for me to get my act together in really fundamental areas of my life. So, yeah.
Well, you've certainly given me lots of things to think about and a list of actionable things to start doing. So thanks for that. And let's wrap up with your top tip.
My top tip. Okay, so I really enjoy how you cued me toward actionable, because the top tip that I gave you when I was working through my homework for the show, I don't know if that's a secret. Was I supposed to say that there's homework?
No, it's fine. Okay. It's fine.
Was don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. So, again with this, and I think it's a consumerist thing, we think that we have unlimited resources of all different kinds to throw at these projects or these life events. The reality is we don't. We have to do what in business they call fail fast, right? So you have to just do the best you can. Or, you know, even 80%. Maybe you could give 92% and you choose to give 80. 80% on a day that you were given, that you were previously giving nothing, is a pretty good shot, right? So you've basically guaranteed that you're not having a zero day. You've done something that moves you ahead toward what your goals are, because now you, of course, know what all your goals are because you've sat down and thought about this in the context of budget and economy. And then you can, from there, you can just be easy on yourself and just, you know, take it a day at a time.
It's knowing, isn't it? It's knowing when to let go and when something is good enough to release it into the world. That's one of my biggest issues, perfectionism, and it just holds you up and you don't get it out there. So you just need to let go of something having to be perfect.
You have to let it go. I'm good enough and this is good enough. And I've learned, I haven't failed, I've learned, and my next one will be good enough too. Right? I think that's it's a hard trick to deeply, deeply, deeply be okay with yourself in that respect.
And the more you do it, the better you're going to get anyway.
Oh!
So the closer to that perfect you will get.
Yeah, I'm completely okay with giving her, I'm going to say on the average day, about 64%. So, but I've been working at this.
Well, thank you, Barb, so much for talking to me today. It's been a blast, as I knew it would be.
Thanks for having me. I had a great time. And, you know, if there's anything, especially the thing about postpartum anxiety, if there's anything any more in terms of resources or contact information that you need for the show, just let me know and I'm happy to provide them. Okay. I want women to live the best, whatever that means to them. I think it's just the way it should be. And we're all entitled to it.
Thank you. To get the resources and links from the show, please go to ketowomenpodcast.com. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you want to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomenpodcast.com. If you fancy joining me on this exciting adventure and want to help me create new episodes, please go to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowomen or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. It's thanks to the two keto dudes that I'm hosting this podcast, so please consider heading to their Patreon page at patreon.2keto.com and help them bring you more podcasts like this one. Please help other people hear about and find this podcast by reviewing the show on iTunes and Facebook. Every star, preferably 5 of course, and review helps. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support means the world to me. Thank you. This week's quote is from florist Griffith Joyner and seems very fitting for Barb's episode. When anyone tells me I can't do anything, I'm just not listening anymore. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.